Welcome to the Family Farm Podcast, priority topics for family medicine and community pharmacy. Hi everyone, my name is Tina Lien and I'm a fourth-year pharmacy student at the University of British Columbia.
And I'm Billy Lin. I'm a family practice resident at the University of British Columbia. So today we're going to talk about dyslipidemia, and Tina's going to give us an introduction.
Yes, yeah, so the topic of this podcast, that's dyslipidemia, is a bit of a misnomer because after reading the 2012 update of the Canadian Cardiovascular Society guidelines for the diagnosis and treatment of dyslipidemia for the prevention of cardiovascular disease in the adult, we noticed that the issue is not about poor lipid control as much as it's about lowering cardiovascular risk in patients at different risk levels. So lipids, and more specifically HDL and total cholesterol levels, they are of course an important part of the Framingham Risk Score, which is the standard cardiovascular risk assessment tool used by CCS in developing their guideline. So in the next 2 to 3 podcasts, we will first summarize the CCS guideline and discuss the risk assessment, screening, diagnosis, and treatment of dyslipidemia. We will also cover the commonly used lipid medications.
The CCS guideline uses a modified version of the well-established Framingham Risk Score to calculate the 10-year cardiovascular disease risk. We will post a link to the Framingham Risk Score on show notes. But to summarize, the CCS guideline categorizes individuals into a low risk, intermediate risk, and a high risk group. And the low risk is individuals with less than 10% 10-year cardiovascular disease risk. Intermediate risk is 10 to 19%, and the high risk is greater than 20%. The Framingham Risk Score includes the following parameters: age, HDL-C, total cholesterol, systolic blood pressure, smoking status, diabetes, and gender. And the modification used by CCS is family history of premature CVD, meaning less than 55 years of age in a male or less than 65 years of age in a female first-degree relative. In the presence of this, then the risk calculated by the Framingham Risk Score will be doubled for individuals 30 to 59 years of age without diabetes. Like I said, this risk assessment tool is going to be linked from our show notes for this podcast.
A Framingham Risk Score is a great tool, but for individuals with low short-term risk, such as those who are young, the cardiovascular age could be a better tool to communicate how much risk the patient actually has. Because if the percentage is low, a 1% versus a 2% might not feel too different for a patient.
So the cardiovascular age is calculated as the patient's age minus the difference between his or her estimated remaining life expectancy and the average remaining life expectancy of Canadians of the same age and sex.
Or to put it in another way, the patient's cardiovascular age is his or her age plus the difference in life expectancy in the patient compared to his or her peers.
Here's an example. If a 30-year-old male smoker has a life expectancy of 40 years, according to his cardiovascular health status, and let's say an average Canadian male has a life expectancy of 80 years, given the average 30-year-old Canadian man a remaining life expectancy of 50 years, then the patient therefore has a remaining life expectancy that's 10 years shorter than his peers,
making his cardiovascular age 30 plus 10, which equals to 40 years of age. Disease screening for cardiovascular disease risk. So screening for lipids is recommended in adult males greater than 40 years of age and females greater than 50 years of age, or postmenopausal women, unless they have any reasons to have elevated risk. And these include ethnic groups such as South Asians or First Nations, or patients with any of the following conditions: current cigarette smoker, diabetes, arterial hypertension, family history of premature CVDs, family history of hyperlipidemia, males with erectile dysfunction, chronic kidney disease, inflammatory disease, HIV infection, COPD, clinical evidence of atherosclerosis or abdominal aneurysm, clinical manifestation of hyperlipidemia or obesity with a BMI greater than 27. So for these patients at a higher risk, the screening should start at any age.
As for how to screen, so what we do is to take history and examination, LDL, HDL, triglyceride, non-HDL, and these will be calculated from their profile, glucose and eGFR. Optional testing is the ApoB, so instead of a standard lipid panel, and urine albumin creatinine ratio if the eGFR is less than 60, if they have hypertension and diabetes. Now for their Framingham risk score, if it's less than 5%, then you want to repeat the screening every 3 to 5 years. If the risk score is greater than 5%, then you want to repeat every year.
Before we go into the cardiovascular disease risk levels, every patient would benefit from a health behavior modification regardless of their cardiovascular disease risk. So for every single risk level, always consider lifestyle modification. For individuals categorized into a low-risk group, meaning 10% or less, 10-year vascular disease risk, the recommendation is to start statin therapy if the LDL is greater than 5 millimoles per liter, which could signify that they have familial hypercholesterolemia or other genetic dyslipidemia syndromes. But for majority of patients, the LDL will be less than 5 millimoles per liter. Then in this group, if their Framingham risk score is less than 5%, then no statin is necessary at this point. If their Framingham risk score is between 5 to 9%, then they recommend considering optional secondary testing and base the decision for treatment on the outcome of the secondary testing. In patients for whom treatment is initiated, they recommend a 50% reduction in LDL. And we will go over the secondary testing later.
And for those with intermediate risk, that is patients with no high risk features and FRS between 10 to 19%, if their LDL level is greater than 3.5 millimoles per liter, then you want to go to statin therapy. However, if their LDL is less than 3.5, you can do an alternate target testing, and that is testing for the ApoB and the non-HDLC. So for the ApoB, if it's greater than 1.2 grams per liter, or the non-HDLC greater than 4.3 millimoles per liter, then you can go towards statin therapy. However, if both of these targets are not reached, which is lower for the ApoB, lower than 1.2 grams per liter, non-HDLC lower than 4.3 millimoles per liter, then you can go towards an optional secondary testing. Now, if after the secondary testing they are at high risk, then go towards statin therapy. But if they are not in high risk, then continue the health behavior modification with no statin therapy.
So both the alternate targets, the ApoB and the non-HDLC, and the secondary testing are optional. They are recommended to better risk stratified patients. But if the LDL is less than 3.5 in an intermediate risk patient, it is reasonable to stay with lifestyle management and hold off statin therapy for now. And the treatment target for this group is LDL of less than 2 millimoles per liter or greater than 50% reduction. Alternative target is ApoB less than 0.8 grams per liter or non-HDLC less than 2.6 millimoles per liter. So finally, for the high-risk group, in patients with a Framingham risk score of greater than 20% or who have clinical atherosclerosis, abdominal aortic aneurysm, or diabetes of greater than 50 years of duration and age older than 30 years, or any diabetes with age older than 40 years, or the presence of microvascular disease, high-risk kidney disease, or high-risk hypertension, they're all considered to be patients with high cardiovascular disease risk, and they should all be treated with a statin therapy. The treatment target is the same as the intermediate risk group, meaning LDL of less than 2, or greater than 50% reduction, or ApoB less than 0.8, or non-HDLC less than 2.6. So what is this secondary testing? For subjects with 10-year vascular disease risk of 5% to 19%, it is recommended to consider the following biomarkers and non-invasive tests for better risk stratification. A note of caution is that many of these tests are not proven to reduce cardiovascular disease risk,
except for some evidence for high sensitivity CRP and EGFR. So the biomarkers that can be used for secondary testing include lipoprotein A, high sensitivity CRP, hemoglobin A1C, albumin-creatinine ratio, and EGFR. And there are some non-invasive testing that could be used for secondary testing. These include graded exercise stress testing, carotid ultrasound, ankle-brachial index, and coronary artery calcium.
The CCS guidelines specifically said that they do not recommend multiple tests, and clinical judgment should be exercised to decide on which tests to order and how much value to place in them.
So in terms of non-statin pharmacotherapy, the CCS guidelines stated that there is no study to date to have demonstrated any increased cardiovascular disease protection with any other lipid-modulating drug when added to a statin therapy. Now, before we wrap this up, let's jump away from the CCS guidelines for a second, and let's talk about secondary causes of dyslipidemia. These include type 2 diabetes, excessive alcohol consumption, cholestatic liver disease, nephrotic syndrome, chronic renal failure, hypothyroidism, cigarette smoking, obesity, and some medications.
Did someone say medications?
Yes.
Okay, I'll answer your questions. So, common medications that can cause secondary dyslipidemia, and that includes beta blockers without intrinsic sympathomimetic or alpha blocking activity, corticosteroids, highly active antiretroviral therapy, hormone replacement therapy, oral contraceptives, and thiazide diuretics.
Well, thank you, Tina. You're becoming a pro.
Oh, well, thank you.
So this brings us to the end to the summary of the CCS guideline on dyslipidemia.
We are aware of the new 2013 American Heart Association guidelines on dyslipidemia, in which the treatment groups as well as the targets are substantially different from the CCS guidelines. If we get a chance, we will discuss the AHA guidelines in a separate podcast.
For our next episode, Tina, the student pharmacist, will bring us more information on all the statin medications and other lipid medications.
That's right. So I'll go over the details of each class of medications, and hopefully that can give you a better understanding of all the treatments used for lipid lowering.
So until then, thank you for listening.
And we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Family Farm Podcast. Please leave your feedback and check out our show notes at fppodcast.org.